This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
Is another edition of Buscando America, and I am your steward, Eduardo de Landeros Tierre. These are the guardian principles behind KBOO Community Radio. KBOO shall be a model of programming, filling needs that other media do not, providing programming to diverse communities and unserved or underserved groups. KBOO shall provide access and training to those communities. KABU's news and public affairs programming shall place an emphasis on providing a forum for unpopular, controversial, or neglected perspectives on important local, national, and international issues, reflecting KABU's values of peace, justice, democracy, and human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression and social change. KBOO's arts, cultural, and music programming shall cover a wide spectrum of expression, from traditional to experimental, and reflect the diverse cultures that KBOO serves. KBOO shall strive for spontaneity in programming excellence, both in content and technique. And I think that's important to read every once in a while, since KBOO is grassroots community radio, and I hope that we don't forget that. And I'm saying that because of on the heels in the marches of May 1st, where a group of volunteers, we came together, we shared, and we shared joyfully to make, to take over the radio station is what we did on May 1st, to bring programming from all across the country on the national boycott and May Day. It was a wonderful experience for all of us at KBOO on May 1st, and I'm still riding the energy of that. And as sort of give you a flavor of what happened last Monday, here's something.
A nuestros compañeros y compañeras en las calles hoy, si lo detiene la migra o la policía, recuerde sus derechos. Tiene el derecho a estar callado. No tiene que decir dónde nació ni cualquier otra información. No tiene que mostrar documentos migratorios. Si lo arresta, no tiene que contestar ninguna pregunta. En hacerlo sería usado en su contra. Por 2 horas después de su detención, tiene derecho a hacer una llamada para ponerse en contacto con un abogado, una organización comunitaria o un familiar o amigo que le pueda ayudar. Tenga moneda siempre para usar el teléfono. Durante estas 2 horas, la migra o la policía solo podrá pedirle su nombre. Después se puede seguir negándose a contestar cualquier pregunta. Para ponerse en contacto con un abogado, se puede llamar Legal Aid Services of Oregon a 503-224-4086 o 888-610-8764 o Oregon Legal Services a 503-224-9483 o Voz Proyecto de Educación de Derechos Laborales a 503-233-6787. To our friends and allies in the streets today, if you are detained by the INS or police, remember your rights. You have the right to remain silent. You do not have to say where you were born, show identification or immigration documents, or share any other information. If arrested, you have the right to refuse to answer questions because whatever you say could be used against you. For 2 hours after your arrest, you have the right to call a lawyer, community organization, friend, or family that can help you. Always have change with you to use the phone. During these 2 hours, INS and the police are only allowed to ask your name. After, you can continue to refuse to answer their questions. To reach a lawyer, you can call Legal Aid Services of Oregon at 503-224-4086 or 888-610-8764 or Oregon Legal Services at 503-224-9483 or VOS Workers' Rights Education Project at 503-233-6787.
tune, I'm going to be talking with fellow Latino Latina Zuma Aguilar from New York, an artist and videographer, about her take on what happened on May 1st, and then later with KPFT in Houston, Ernesto Aguilar de San Miguel, and he's the program director down at KPFT Houston, and then later with Steve Witt from the Farm Workers Ministry, get his take on what happened on May 1st when the United States was mobilized.
Este corrido, vea un buen amigo mío que al dejar mi pueblo grato, que yo fui al cruzar el río, se iría a los surumatos. Sí será, parece mentira que siendo chicano, tan hombre y tan sano, se vino de allá.
And Ernesto, are you there? And Ernesto, are you there?
I am. Okay. I am here, yes, sir.
Okay, great. First of all, let's tell everybody here in the Portland area who you are and who you're with.
My name is Ernesto Aguilar. I am program director with Pacifica Radio Station KPFT in Houston, Texas, and I want to say what I like to the Rafa out there in Portland.
Okay, so let's tell everybody what happened and your take on what happened on May 1st, and especially down in Houston.
Well, out in Houston, we had several thousand people march as part of the May 1st boycott. Several businesses here closed, as well as many school walkouts occurred as a result of the call to action. There was quite a bit of action out here in the Southwest. A lot of people who decided to step up and organize various actions. It was very, very inspiring on a lot of levels. A lot of the young people who were represented, a lot of older people, some people from the Movimiento, of course, involved very actively the immigrant community. It's been a very large outpouring of people, everyone from, as I said, the immigrant community to African-American organizers, Asian organizers, and many others. It's been a very strong show of unity out here in Houston, Texas.
In terms of KPFT, community radio, and KBOO, and our relationship with you that day, what happened? And there was a... Give people a flavor of what was going on with that.
Oh, no, absolutely. We had many of our reporters, as well as many of our Latino programmers, who gave calls into KBOO to let them know what was going on from the front lines here. Here at KPFT, we're part of the Pacifica Network. We certainly make as much effort as we can to support community organizers and community radio stations like KBOO all over the country. We got a chance to collaborate a bit, share some content with the listeners in Portland, and we got to hear some of the things going on in Portland here in Houston. It's definitely a very, very inspiring collaboration to see what's going on all the way out there in Oregon, and hopefully to share with you all what's going on here in Texas.
Yes, what was wonderful about that day was we weren't just talking about and covering the marches here in our area, but other radio stations from other grassroots radio stations from across the country were calling us and sharing their reporters and their programs with us that day. And to me, that was the high point of what community radio, grassroots radio, is all about.
People from the front lines, people from the streets who are out there saying, hey, this is what's going on, talking to those affected voices and bringing it out to the people on the radio. That's what it's all about. That is community radio, no doubt.
And now, we had this massive marches all across the country all day and night. And what happens now, though? I mean, after the furor and the high energy, where do we go? Where should we be going, Ernesto?
For me, I think that the next step that we need to take is to really, both as a Movimiento, as well as people who are supportive outside of that Movimiento, start thinking about what these issues mean politically. Not just simply what does citizenship mean, but what some of the perceptions of both Mexico, as well as immigrants, as Latinos, what those perceptions are. So one of the biggest issues that I hear brought up from critics is, well, various people are criminals, or the implication, well, you don't want the United States to turn into Mexico. And in fact, that's a serious political issue that we need to talk about. Everything from whether one can wave a Mexican flag in the United States versus whether one should be waving an American flag, whether we start having dialogues where the issue becomes a voting and all these other things, or whether this is about justice and whether it's about globalization, whether it's about really serious issues as opposed to Americanism. There was a comment that I heard just recently, and it was meant in jest, but it is actually very, very illuminating in a lot of respects. The comment that I heard was, the ill-informed immigrant today is the uninformed American tomorrow. And we want to try to start shifting this dialogue, in my opinion, from just this idea where we need to make sure that everyone is quote-unquote an immigrant, to understanding that there are a lot of people here that weren't immigrants. There are people here who were brought here as a result of slavery. There are people whose land this was in the first place who were colonized. And we need to have that as a serious discussion and really start educating some people politically before we start to say, well, we want to go ahead and have everybody waving red, white, and blue, and we're all American.
Right. Now, in terms of KPFT now, post May 1st, is there any planning going around now for future coverage of post May 1st in terms of programming? You guys got, you're thinking about, or are you going to be talking about that, or what?
We did a little bit of discussion about that since May 1st. We've had several programs this week, including today. We did a three-hour special for Cinco de Mayo commemorating the 1862 Battle of Puebla. But we've done a lot of discussion about a lot of these issues, both summarizing what happened on May 1st and talking about next steps. And I expect over the next couple of weeks we're going to be making sure that we have opportunities for that type of dialogue interlingually Spanish, English, many other languages, because although Latinos are by far most affected by the immigration issue, this certainly affects African immigrants. Houston, Texas in particular has a large African population, primarily from Nigeria, Asian population, we have a fairly significant Asian population, and others. So therefore, we try to have this dialogue in a pretty open way, and a way that is sustainable, and a way that's ideally going to bring in more people to the fold. We have plans to continue this programming for the next few months to come, at least.
You mentioned Cinco de Mayo. I've always had some divided feelings about that, mostly because there's this popular, almost touristic view of what Cinco de Mayo is, and a lot of people don't know what Cinco de Mayo is. So since you mentioned it, you want to tell people what Cinco de Mayo is and maybe what it isn't.
I'm glad we have a moment to talk about that, absolutely. Cinco de Mayo actually commemorates, a lot of people see beer specials and parties and all these other things, but what the holiday itself is actually commemoration of the Battle of Puebla, which happened in 1862. There's a lot of very interesting Mexican history to this, because before the Battle of Puebla, there was a fairly significant caste struggle within Mexico. After the seizure of much of Mexico's land by the United States in 1848, there was quite a pretty pitched struggle in Mexico between conservatives and liberals. Liberals often being represented by the indigenous Indian communities, and the conservative wing of that those castes being represented mostly by Spaniards, or those of Spanish ancestry. So there's a very significant struggle going on within Mexico over globalization in many respects, whether Mexico would have different agreements with different European countries. Nevertheless, that's a very interesting discussion that goes above and beyond perhaps the Battle of Puebla. But getting back to that, in 1862, the French, who were in negotiations with Mexico over trade and over commerce, Mexico was actually trying to settle a few debts with many of its European counterparts, the French actually had a much larger agenda. Napoleon felt that having an outlet for France in the Americas would be a benefit to France. So a very large battalion of French soldiers was sent to Mexico, basically to colonize it, to take over the country, to depose the government, and make Mexico a French holding. The French had a fairly significant army. The French army at that time was probably one of the most feared armies in the world, if not the most feared army in the world. They had sent over a fairly number of large battalions to Mexico at that time, which was still struggling with many of these internal politics, had gathered together some civilian armies. Fairly poorly armed, poorly outfitted groups of Mexicans led by Zaragoza. And basically what ended up happening, just to kind of describe if people can get an idea of what this was, essentially you had a fairly ragtag Mexican army which had hidden behind ruins from some old churches and some old buildings, and you had several battalions of French soldiers who started up at first coming up from a hill. You'd hear these drum beats because the French army at the time was well known for actually setting the scene to some extent. They would bring drummers that would pound the drums and the armies would march. So you would have these drummers that were coming up this hill, and you'd hear the drum beats coming down the hill. You'd hear all this stuff, and the Mexican army was hidden behind ruins. They knew that these armies were coming towards them. They knew that the French army had a very infamous reputation, and they waited. Battalions of armies came out, and as the armies came closer, the Mexicans stood up and shot the French. The French retreated, decided they were going to come back, came back, were shot again, and the battle continued for quite some time until the French retreated. At the time, it was pretty much one of the most significant upsets in military history for the French, and it's been a symbol for many Mexican-Americans in particular for what Mexicans have been able to do in their stand against imperialism. Now, in Mexico, it's actually not as significant as 16 de Septiembre, but nevertheless, for many Mexican-Americans, it was seized upon as something, as a matter of pride, standing up against imperialism.
The 16 de Septiembre being
Mexican Independence Day.
Let me tell you something. There's celebrations here in Oregon, here in Portland, around Cinco de Mayo, and to be honest about, and some of the more popular events are Cinco de Mayo mean very little to me, just because it's become so, like you said, beer and getting drunk and people, you know, smashing things, and that it means little to me. And so perhaps I'm a little pessimistic about it. Being Latino,
Cinco de Mayo is a people's victory. It's a people's struggle. It's a recognition of the Mexican people's ability to stand up against the most feared military in the world and to say, you will not come onto our land, you will not take what is ours, and we will fight you for every blade of grass until you leave our land. And for the Mexican people of the time, despite all the fact that all of these battles were going on internally within Mexico with all of these different conservatives and liberal factions of the country, at least some of these factions being able to put it aside for a few moments. And to be honest with you, if you go back into the history, most of the citizen militias were led by liberal factions. That's another side story. But nevertheless, for the Mexican people to be able to stand up and push back this imperialist army was very, very significant at the time. And it's still very significant today. I've heard comparisons to what happened in Mexico and what's going on in Iraq right now.
Yes, well, let me just say this, Ernesto. I hope, I know that community radio stations, Cable and KPFT are going to be doing a lot more collaboration. I mean, I'm especially between us Latinos here in the Northwest and Latinos there in Texas. And so that's, you know, community radio.
It's powerful. It is very, very powerful. Having the gente all over this country standing up, who are going out there as community radio people, telling people stories. Well, I talked with a filmmaker at one point about what significance covering these movimientos is. And he said, in all honesty, the media, major mainstream media back in the 60s when I was doing this, wasn't telling us stories. They weren't telling Corky Gonzalez's story. They weren't talking about Lorazo Unida. They weren't telling the real story. And the reason that this type of radio is so important, the reason that I hope that there are people who are listening who pick up the phone and call KBOO and say, hey, I'd like to support the station. I mean, the reason why you should be doing that is because people like Eduardo, people like all these other folks at KBOO, a lot of great gente over there at KBOO, they are on the front line telling our stories. Because there really is, you're not going to get this in Fox News. You're not going to get the people on CNN who are going to open up a mic and let the people tell it as it is. They're going to go ahead and go to the talking heads. They're going to go to the politicians and the mayors and whatever else. There are people who are experts besides politicians as experts. There are people who are life experts, people who can tell a story and tell it because they've experienced it. And the fact remains that those people from the movimiento, those people who were out there organizing, those people who were out there struggling, even those who were out there every day on the streets, those people are experts just as well. And community radio tells those stories. We have an opportunity to capture our history and preserve our history, an oral history that really is going to be whitewashed completely by these mainstream media if stations like KBOO weren't around. And that's straight up. That's the way it works.
Okay, Ernesto, thanks a lot. And si se puede. You know.
Si se puede.
Okay.
Órale.
Nos vemos.
Y aquel dinero circulación le da. Les cae pesetas, sin duda tus dolientes, de que la miran que no se aguanta ya. Se van los bailes a todas las funciones, aquella viuda que acaba de heredar. Sin importarle que miren tus acciones, lo que hace poco te fuimos a enterrar. No tires tu dinero, ni te embuses ni vayas a jugar, ni te emboques aquel vil matadero, donde toca piano la va a explotar. Si comienzas con tus fanfarronadas, si aprovechas de bien aquel canón. Se la empiezan a hacer de vacilada,
y te tragan muy suave como el peón. Ay, ay, niñas de cejas rasuradas, que temprano se empiezan a arreglar, esperando a que caiga la majada para darle sus caldos a tomar. Caen solitos los pobres batallones, haciendo hilo más loca que el cordón. Van formando sus bellas ilusiones, sin tenerle a su lomo compasión. Ahí disparan como ametralladora, con esas locas gachas del restaurante. Sin importarle que su chamaco llore, porque le quitan de su boquita el pan. Le dan madera, madera y más madera, y bien pudiera formar un gran jacal. Le dan caballo con su vaciladera, pero el cariño ni esperanza le dan. Ay, los pobres camellos son esclavos, ya no pueden hacerse un pantalón. Se los vacilan con todos sus centavos, por andar como el diablo en el panteón. Dios los tenga de su bendita mano y los mire con ojos de piedad. Si pelaran los ojos más temprano, no seguirían la majada como está.
KBOO, Portland.
siento por mi raza. Artistas, pintores, camellos y vagos, se los llevo la desgracia. Ya no habrá rentas pagadas, ni sacos de provisión, de esa que viene marcada, que dice Nato Pisón. Hay muchos que hasta se alegran a darle al trabajo, ya no anden de vagos, lo que es hora sí se friega. Ya tendremos pescadores, también habrá lavaplatos, se acabaron los gorrones, zapatero a tus zapatos. Los mandaron al infierno, ya no habrá más casas ni carros pagados con los cheques del gobierno. Unos dicen que se enfermaban y no querían trabajar, los demás se emborrachaban por cuenta de la ciudad. Acabó el doble pie, les quitaron ya la ayuda, tendrán que ganarse los nicles y daimes para curarse la cruda.
And this is an original song and story by Alfonso Perez from here in Portland. He's a local poet and storyteller, and this is his.
Propuestas tan malas de racistas con poder. mucho amor. Queremos leyes humanas que no alimenten rencor. Si aprueban leyes racistas, viviremos con dolor. Quiero vivir en familia, así se vive mejor. Los niños son el futuro, yo he escuchado profanar. Hay niños que aún no hablan, otros aprendiendo a hablar, pero un futuro sufriendo a nadie le va a gustar. Quiero invitar a los niños en todita la nación. Cantemos todos en coro los versos de esta canción que en el Congreso retumba.
And that was Alfonso Perez. He's a local storyteller, a Mexicano storyteller and poet and singer. And that was his composition about a children's fairy tale, actually. Steve, are you there?
I am.
Great. And well, let's tell everybody who you are and who you are with.
Okay. Well, first of all, Feliz Cinco de Mayo.
Great.
My name is Reverend Stephen Witte. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Farmworker Ministry, which is an education and advocacy group that speaks out on behalf of Northwest farmworkers.
And May 1st. Let's give a recap of what happened on May 1st in terms of and what you were involved.
Okay. Well, May 1st was absolutely incredible. First of all, I was deeply touched and moved and inspired by the Latino community, particularly the young Latinos that were out there marching because they understand the big picture. I also felt a great deal of pride for those young Latinos because most of them, if they're not of voting age, they probably will be by the next election. So, I mean, it was beautiful to see these young folks standing up for in many cases, their parents and other family members. Understanding that the issue is much bigger than just immigration. I also saw church banners, you know, and many church congregations marched with the folks, as well as many union banners. And for me, it was just an incredible coming together of a lot of different energies. And I think that more and more folks are beginning to understand that the immigration debacle that the extreme right has kind of formulated is one, backfiring, and two, is really stirring up the imaginations and passion of folks that that have been silent for far too long.
Okay, now where do we go now? What happens next? And we had this, it's wonderful, all this energy, but what's the plan? What's going to happen now? What needs to happen?
Well, because this is a grassroots movement, I can't say that there is a general overarching plan other than, when all of this started with the first march in Portland on March 4th, basically we were looking for a safe and legal path to, legal residency, you know, that we wanted to put a stop to anything that could possibly criminalize decent, hardworking folks that are here just to provide for themselves and their family. So that certainly is the overarching thing. I think, like I said, because it is a grassroots effort, I mean, I can't say that there's a particular thing that but like I said, it's just being very clear that there are wrongs and that we are speaking out, that we're not going to be silent anymore. So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, some of the recent raids by the ICE, the Migra, was a feeble attempt at pushing back and saying we're still in power. But even in spite of that, people come out in droves. I mean, the fact that we had two huge, 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 huge marches, you know, going on at the same time, one in Salem and one in Portland, not to mention places like Yakima and Seattle and Boise and, you know, other cities in the Northwest. So, I think that it is showing the courage and the dreams of so many of our citizens, and that we're all tied into this to this struggle together. And I think that's what the union movement is saying, you know, with their desire to work, particularly within the Change to Win unions and many of the unions of the AFL-CIO, that, you know, that we want things better for all workers. So I think that, you know, for the first time we're starting to see it's not a black and white or a white and brown issue, that it's an issue that all these issues affect all of us very intimately and very personally, and that it's going to take all of us to provide the solutions and remedies for these problems. So I really see a lot of people coming together and talking, asking, you know, not only how does this affect us, but how does this affect those around us? So I think the energy is producing a lot of discussion and a lot of ways of how that we can corporately work on these problems in spite of what those in power want to do.
This also talk about the role of the churches in
right.
terms of their support or non-support, as in the case of the Catholic Church in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, I think certainly Cardinal Mahoney's been very unique in his calls.
You want to give folks a little
sure.
recap on who he that. That.
Cardinal Mahoney is the Cardinal Archbishop of Los Angeles, and on Ash Wednesday, which is the 40 days prior to Easter, in his sermon, he was speaking to the Catholics of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, and he was saying that the immigration situation, and particularly the Sensenbrenner King Bill, was horrible, and that he would instruct the priests, religious, and faithful of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles to do civil disobedience if indeed the Sensenbrenner King Bill was made law. And since then, he has continued to be an outspoken supporter of immigrant rights and social justice. So, and I think the other piece that's been a gift from via Cardinal Mahoney's speech is many other churches, including the National Council of Churches, you know, have also spoken out very strongly.
And your farm worker ministry, tell folks about how you see this spiritual. Certainly, there is a spiritual.
There certainly is a spiritual component, Eduardo. And I think what it is, and I think across the religious spectrum, I just received a phone call the other day from an evangelical pastor, which is kind of traditionally been kind of silent and maybe more right-leaning, but you know, they're wanting to get a group going that's more progressive thinking in Oregon and asked me to participate. But I think churches across the board are starting to say, you know, this is the core of who we are, not just churches, even in our Muslim and Jewish brothers and sisters communities. They're also saying, you know, what is the very core of our sacred writings telling us? And, you know, and how are we living that out? Or are we living that out? So it's been a very energizing force for not only progressive religious communities, but even some more conservative religious communities to really look at what is the core of what we profess and how do we put those that profession of faith into action.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Well, if people want to know more about the farm worker ministry, and can you tell people how they can get in touch and find
sure.
out more?
It's very easy to find us. Our email address is the initials of our organization, OFWM, Oregon Farm Worker Ministry, at earthlink.net.
And Steve, thank
yes.
you. Thank you. Si se puede, right?
Si se puede.
Nos vemos y chao.
Okay.
And I think it's time, yes, it's time for a poem. Now, I'm going to play a song that caused a little bit of furor in terms of the national anthem, but this is a different national anthem that was it's in Spanish, and a little different wording too, and it was played on May 1st.
López, a la luz de la aurora, lo que tanto aclamamos, la noche al caer, sus estrellas, sus trances,
enseñar
Now, Vanessa Calderon did this really lively interview with a community radio station in Spain, and actually in with Radio Villalba, Collado Villalba, which is just outside of it's northwest of Madrid. And it's the community radio station, and the person that she was talking to there was Arturo Guatemoc, who has a program there, and they talked to each other, and he had Vanessa live on his show there in Spain, and I sort of like just watched the dials and stuff, so I was really, it was fun for me. That whole day, May 1st, was fun for me, and Vanessa, you did a great job, as so many other people like Kayleen and Cherie and Kirsten, my salutes to you. So here's Radio España, and I'll give you some, it's in Spanish, but I hope you can sort of pick up the energy that's there. So here goes. And bear with some of the glitches.
Este viernes alguien cumple años y se te ha olvidado, ¿verdad? Haz memoria.
Fuera de juego todos los viernes.
Maravilloso, fuera de juego.
Quiero saludar a los compañeros de Fuera de Juego.
Magazine Variopinto.
Escucho siempre Fuera de Juego.
Soy gente con criterio.
Fuera de juego.
Para el programa Fuera de Juego en Villalba.
Son tan encantadores.
Pretende, pues, que todos nos lo pasemos muy bien.
Esas grandes personas del programa Fuera de Juego.
Recuerdo todos los viernes de 9 a 10 de la noche.
¡Fuera de Juego!
En la 107.4, que es Radio Villalba.
Fuera de Juego, ¿no?
¿Necesitas más pistas? Este viernes 28 de abril a las 9 de la noche, Fuera de Juego celebra su cuarto aniversario con un programa especial en el que tú no puedes faltar.
Y disfruta, que aquí hay muy buena gente, ya verás.
107.4 Radio Villalba.
Guaipuro Cuauhtémoc, descendiente de los que poblaron la América hace 40.000 años, he venido a encontrar a los que se la encontraron hace ya 500 años. Aquí, pues, nos encontramos todos. Sabemos lo que somos y es bastante. Nunca tendremos otra cosa. El hermano aduanero europeo me pide papel escrito con visa para poder descubrir a los que me descubrieron. El hermano usurero europeo me pide pago de una deuda contraída por Judas, a quien nunca autoricé verdaderamente. El hermano usurero europeo me explica que toda deuda se paga con intereses, aunque sea vendiendo seres humanos y países enteros sin pedirles consentimiento. Yo los voy descubriendo. También yo puedo reclamar pagos, también puedo reclamar intereses. Consta en archivo de Indias, papel sobre papel, recibo sobre recibo, firma sobre firma, que solamente entre el año 1503 y el 1660... llegaron a Sanlúcar de Barrameda 185.000 kilos de oro y 16 millones de kilos de plata que provenían de América. ¿Saqueo? No lo creyera yo. ¿Por qué es pensar que los hermanos cristianos faltan a su séptimo mandamiento? ¿Expoliación? Guárdeme el cielo de figurarme que los europeos, igual que Caín, matan y después niegan la sangre del hermano. ¿Genocidio? Eso sería dar crédito a los calumniadores como Bartolomé de las Casas, que calificaron el encuentro de destrucción de las Indias, o a ultras como el doctor Arturo Pietri, quien afirma que el arranque del capitalismo y de la actual civilización europea se debió a la inundación de metales preciosos arrancados por ustedes, mis hermanos europeos, a mis también hermanos de América. No. Esos 185.000 kilos de oro y 16 millones de kilos de plata deben ser considerados como el primero de varios préstamos amigables de América para el desarrollo de Europa. Lo contrario sería presuponer crímenes de guerra, lo que daría derecho no solo a exigir devolución inmediata, sino indemnización por daños y perjuicios. Yo, Guaipuro Cuauhtémoc, prefiero creer en la menos ofensiva de las hipótesis para mis hermanos europeos. Tan fabulosas exportaciones de capital no fueron más que el inicio de un plan Marshall de Schuma para garantizar la reconstrucción de la bárbara Europa, arruinada por sus deplorables guerras contra los cultos musulmanes, defensores del álgebra, la arquitectura, el baño cotidiano y otros logros superiores de la civilización. Por eso, una vez pasado el quinto centenario del préstamo, podemos preguntarnos, ¿han hecho los hermanos europeos un uso racional, responsable o por lo menos productivo de los recursos tan generosamente adelantados por el Fondo Indoamericano Internacional? Deploramos decir que no. En lo estratégico, lo dilapidado en la batalla de Lepanto, armadas invencibles, terceros Reich y otras formas de exterminio mutuo por las tropas gringas de la OTAN, como Panamá, pero sin canal. En lo financiero, han sido incapaces, después de una moratoria de 500 años, tanto de cancelar el capital e intereses, como de independizarse de las rentas líquidas, las materias primas y la energía barata que les exporta el tercer mundo. Este deplorable cuadro corrobora la afirmación de Milton Friedman, conforme a la cual una economía subsidiada jamás podrá funcionar, y nos obliga a reclamarles, por su propio bien, el pago de capital e intereses que tan generosamente hemos demorado todos los siglos. Al decir esto, aclaramos que no nos rebajaremos a cobrarle a los hermanos europeos las viles y sanguinarias tasas flotantes de un 20% y hasta un 30% que los hermanos europeos les cobran a los pueblos del tercer mundo. Nos limitaremos a exigir la devolución de los metales preciosos adelantados, más el módico interés fijo de un 10% anual acumulado durante los últimos 300 años. Sobre esta base, aplicando la europea fórmula del interés compuesto, informamos a los descubridores que solo nos deben, como primer pago de su deuda, una masa de 185.000 kilos de oro y 16 millones de kilos de plata, ambas elevada a la potencia de 300. Es decir, un número para cuya expresión total serían necesarias más de 300 cifras y que superan ampliamente el peso de la Tierra. Muy pesadas son esas moles de oro y plata. ¿Cuánto pesaría calculada en sangre? Aducir que Europa en medio milenio no ha podido generar riqueza suficiente para cancelar este módico interés sería tanto como admitir su absoluto fracaso financiero y o la demencial irracionalidad de los supuestos del capitalismo. Tales cuestiones metafísicas, desde luego, no nos inquietan a los indoamericanos, pero sí exigimos la inmediata firma de una carta de intenciones que discipline a los pueblos deudores del viejo continente y los obligue a cumplir su compromiso mediante una pronta privatización o reconversión de Europa que les permita entregarnos la entera como primer pago de una deuda histórica. Dicen los prestamistas del viejo mundo que su civilización está en una bancarrota que les impide cumplir con sus compromisos financieros o morales. En tal caso, nos contentaríamos con que nos pagaran con la bala con la que mataron al poeta, pero no podrán porque esa bala es el corazón de Europa.
This is, again, community radio station, Radio Villalba, and community radio station in Spain.
tardes a todo el mundo. Somos Nómadas contra el Imperio, ese programa de Radio Villalba en el 107.4, la frecuencia modulada. Que bueno, que...
Vanessa.
Sí.
Hola. Nada, me dice Cito que cuando quieras que intervengas, ¿vale?
Vale.
Yo te paso al control. Sí. Directamente, y ellos van a estar ahí, y cuando quieras, pues tú les puedes interrumpir si quieres, ¿vale?
Vale.
Venga.
Muchas gracias.
Desde hace muchos años hay movimientos sociales que están...
Hola,
en
chicos.
...campaña de anulación de la deuda externa, ¿no? Esa deuda ilegal.
¿Me oye alguien por ahí?
Vamos a
bueno,
ver,
me parece que tenemos ya una llamada, yo os lo voy a anunciar. Nos está llamando una compañera muy querida nuestra, Vanessa, que ha participado activamente durante un tiempo antes de que se haya ido a vivir a los Estados Unidos. Y nos llama ahora desde una radio de Estados Unidos. Buenas tardes, Vanessa.
Hola, bueno, buenos días.
Bueno,
aquí.
Buenas tardes para nosotros.
Sí, sí, porque son las 10:30 de la mañana del viernes y,
¿sí?
Y os llamo desde Portland, Oregón, desde una radio comunitaria que se llama KBOO, KBOO. Y bueno, quería llamaros para saber la opinión de mis compañeros. Acerca de la ley de inmigración que se está planteando ahora en Estados Unidos, y quería saber la opinión que tenéis acerca de esto. Esta ley es la llamada HR 4437, presentada por un senador de Wisconsin, Sessions Benner, y ahora mismo está en el Senado y está pendiente de ser ratificada. Pero bueno, os voy a contar más o menos de qué va esta ley y de la manifestación y la marcha y toda la movida que se está planificando y organizando para el día 1 de mayo. Esta ley lo que pretende es construir un muro, como el muro de Berlín, pues un muro entre la frontera de Estados Unidos y México, entre otras cosas, endurecer la vigilancia, aumentar la policía, la presencia policial en las fronteras, y luego criminalizar a toda persona que asista a cualquier inmigrante ilegal, ya sea asistencia médica, educativa, de cualquier tipo. Se va a convertir en un crimen el poder asistir a gente que esté en situación de ilegalidad, y luego deportar a todos los inmigrantes ilegales que estén residiendo en este país. En este momento hay como 12 millones de inmigrantes ilegales que tienen ya familia constituida en Estados Unidos, pagan impuestos, tienen casas y llevan aquí viviendo un montón de tiempo, y bueno, y ahora pueden ser deportados en cualquier momento y constituir un delito de, creo que va de 3 años a 30 años si vuelven a entrar en el país y son descubiertos. Entonces, el 1 de mayo lo que se pretende ahora en Estados Unidos es celebrar el Día del Trabajador, que no existe en Estados Unidos. Se pasó...
Donde nació la historia, el 1 de mayo no se celebra.
No se celebra, exactamente. Se celebra en septiembre, hay un Labor Day por ahí raro suelto, pero vamos, no cuando lo celebra medio mundo, que es el día 1 de mayo, el Día del Trabajador. Y se pretende que sea el Día Nacional sin Latinos, que todos los latinos y otras comunidades que se vean en esta misma situación no acudan a trabajar, que los niños no vayan al colegio, que hay marchas convocadas en todo Estados Unidos, y luego se pretende un boicot económico a los productos americanos. Es decir, que no se vaya a comprar, no se compre nada ese día. Y bueno, yo quería hablar con vosotros para preguntaros vuestra opinión y para que os solidaricéis con la causa de nuestros compañeros latinoamericanos y de otras comunidades que están en esta terrible situación.
Eso está hecho, Vanessa.
Bueno, pues a nosotros nos suenan bastantes de las cosas que has comentado. Por ejemplo, el hecho de que se criminaliza todo el que presta ayuda a los inmigrantes, que se permita la deportación inmediata. Eso es una cosa, bueno, que se ha estado barruntando en las leyes de extranjería españolas desde hace años, y bueno, que por desgracia ha habido consenso entre los dos grandes partidos que pueden gobernar en España. Así que bastante chunga la cosa. Por otro lado, me suena bastante a, bueno, 12 millones de inmigrantes, todos ellos trabajadores, porque están trabajando, si no, no estarían ahí, porque han ido a trabajar.
Claro, claro. Han ido a buscar esa vida mejor.
Yo veo aquí, por aquí detrás, una maniobra brutal, porque fruto del miedo de, digamos, de la élite social estadounidense, a que esta gente se convierta en ciudadanos de pleno derecho. Es una cosa paradójica. Necesitan a esos 12 millones de trabajadores baratos y obedientes, porque no tienen los mismos derechos que los ciudadanos de Estados Unidos, pero diréis, entonces, ¿por qué sacan una norma por la que les pueden echar a esos 12 millones si dicen que les necesitan? Pues precisamente por eso, para gestionar el miedo de esa gente a ser expulsados, delatados, deportados. A mí me parece una de las maniobras más maquiavélicas de los últimos años, ¿no? De lo último que se ha escuchado en Estados Unidos, de lo más maquiavélico que hay, ¿no?
Sí, 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 yo el otro día lo comentaba y decía, pero bueno, es...
Para crear una cortina de humo saca una proposición 24 para echar a todos los inmigrantes de Springfield, o sea, es... Los Simpsons son la historia de la humanidad y en este caso es eso, o sea, yo creo que también hay es la capital del imperio, Estados Unidos necesita un control social muy fuerte y crear enemigos dentro de la propia gente es muy eficaz. Y el otro día había uno de los documentales de Milton Friedman, este gurú neoliberal, que se llama ¿Quién protege al trabajador? Y que habla, básicamente lo que dice es que la seguridad social y el sindicato perjudican a los trabajadores, y hablaba de que podría tener una inmigración libre si no hubiese un estado del bienestar. Se habla de destruir la sanidad, todos los servicios públicos y ya permitir la... Es convertirnos a todos en ilegales, ¿no? Es el camino.
Eso es, poner igual a los derechos, pero a la baja, no a la alta.
Sí, lo decía ayer un amigo mío con lo de que han subido los derechos de los primates en España. Es eso luego para bajarnos a nosotros y guardarnos con ellos.
Sí, esa lógica, lo que decía antes el primer compañero que ha hablado, que es Miguel Monti, esa lógica está también en España, ¿no? El fenómeno de la inmigración es un fenómeno absolutamente imparable, no valen barreras. También aquí, en el sur de los territorios que se consideran parte del Estado español, en Ceuta y en Melilla, se están construyendo unas enormes vallas dobles, triples, con alambradas, con trampas de espinos para que la gente se quede enganchada cuando salte, ¿no? Pero la lógica es la misma. Cuanto más barreras se ponga a la inmigración, más baratos van a ser los sueldos, más bajos van a ser los sueldos de los trabajadores que consigan cobrarla. Cuanto más precarios estén los trabajadores, más difícil va a ser para ellos organizarse. Por eso yo creo que a todos nosotros, a mí especialmente, que viví bastantes años en América Latina, ¿no? 12 años, me emociona que los latinos como trabajadores en Estados Unidos se rebelen, ¿no? Se rebelen y hagan lo que tenemos que hacer siempre los trabajadores, organizarnos y luchar por nuestros derechos, independientemente de dónde ha nacido uno. Eso es circunstancial, ¿no? Uno
sí,
de dónde está, de dónde vive, dónde ama, dónde tiene a su gente y dónde trabaja.
Sí, sí, y además aquí se ve como... Hay como una especie de confrontación entre los...
And this is an interview between Cable and Radio Spain.
Se les ve a los trabajadores latinos como en España, ¿no? Es que nos quitan los trabajos. Es que vienen aquí y entonces nosotros no tenemos trabajo porque vienen ellos. Y en lugar de aunarnos con ellos y luchar por los mismos derechos, por unos derechos, los derechos de los trabajadores, que por lo menos se mantengan los derechos que hemos adquirido durante todos estos años de lucha, y que la gente que venga aquí venga y que tenga un contrato, que tenga un seguro social, que tenga prestaciones médicas, que tenga derecho a la educación como cualquier otro trabajador.
Efectivamente, pueden sonar frases antiguas, pero la unidad de la gente que vivimos de nuestro trabajo es imprescindible, y mientras nos tengan divididos van a tener siempre la posibilidad de ganarnos. Aquí en España hay también desgraciadamente trabajadores jóvenes que, en vez de ver quiénes son sus auténticos enemigos, ¿no? Quienes de verdad les contratan por 600 euros, por 580 euros, por 550 euros, son los ricos, los poderosos. Y entonces, en una maniobra muy cobarde, que además abonan los grupos neonazis, los grupos fascistas, la extrema derecha, incluso sectores importantísimos del Partido Popular, partido que gobernó en España con José María Aznar, la gente es tan cobarde que se lanza por el más débil, ¿no? O sea, mi enemigo no es el banquero, no es el que me roba, no es el patrón, no es la multinacional que me despide, no, mi enemigo es ese inmigrante que cobra menos que yo, que está más necesitado que yo, que tiene menos recursos familiares, menos recursos culturales, menos recursos legales que yo, ¿no? ojalá consigamos, y ese ejemplo de la lucha de los trabajadores latinos y de todos los trabajadores norteamericanos, pues le haga a la gente aquí en España, que somos también en alguna medida latinos, ¿no? Claro. El latín nos pide muy cerca, aquí en Italia y en este país se habló, pues nos haga también reflexionar, ¿no? Aquello que pueden sonar a palabras antiguas, una sola clase.
And this is an interview that Vanessa Calderón from Cable Radio did with Radio Spain. And I just thought I'd play a bit of that conversation to give you an idea of the sense of the scope that happened on May 1st. But online with me, or on the line with me, is Zuma from New York. Zuma, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Great. Well, let's tell people, I'd like to get your take on what happened on May 1st, since it's over with, and then we can talk about what happened next. And first of all, let's tell people who you are.
I'm a MFA candidate for an electronic arts degree here at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York. And I'm an artist and an activist, and I come from Calexico, California. But I'm living in New York, and basically I have experience in the border because I'm a Mexican-American who's lived by the border and commuted through it for many, many years.
And your name?
As Zulma.
Okay. Tell me, can we get your take about what happened on May 1st in New York? You were in New York City, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of really important to mention that Saturday, before May 1st, there was a huge anti-war demonstration. And everybody in New York City, at least, compared very closely the difference, you know, the similarities and differences between the two protests. And also they compared it to the other protests that had happened in April. So a lot of people felt that the April was bigger and that this was smaller, and this was more homogeneously, like Mexican-American or Latino. But there was a lot of different groups, actually. There was a lot of Filipinos, and there was, like, Haitians, and they were organized groups of other minorities that were in support of this bill being brought down, basically, because it's just going to criminalize being an illegal alien, and which it already is, but this would turn it into a felony, which is not good for everybody because it would make us all spies and make us all kind of be willing to possibly just say, hey, you know, that person might be an illegal alien, and because of the Patriot Act that has been passed, you know, that person would barely have any right to call for a lawyer. They actually don't have a right to get a lawyer anymore. If you are caught right now, you have completely different rights than regular, like criminals. Like, this is already enacted, but it's going to be even worse. Like, people are just going to be deported first, you know, because
right.
that's what's already been happening. I have a friend who, he's an artist, and he was deported with no questions asked, virtually, and he had, you know, a visa to come and whatever, but that's another situation.
Where were you in New York City during these marches? Give us a sense of what was happening.
Yeah,
there.
The march started at Union Square, and which is about 14th and Broadway, and it just went all the way down Broadway into City Hall. It turned at a corner and then went right into City Hall of New York City. And I mean, to kind of march down Broadway, I can't really explain. Broadway has the most elite stores and apartments. You know, just think of Park Avenue and Monopoly, you know, and there's also you have to think of these shops are like really wealthy corporate shops, like the best Nikes you can get, the best you know, Gucci, or, you know, there's there's just, like, you know, French pastries and, like, anything that you want, the best of the world is there, and it's being sold at extremely, incredibly high prices. And
that means you didn't get anything to eat from there?
Me? No, yeah. No. Didn't get it.
Okay.
It was really hard because I had to travel that day, but, you know, it was fine. What was funny is after the march, we did get hungry, and we were like, well, let's go to a Mexican restaurant. And we went up to Spanish Harlem to go eat, and of course, our favorite Mexican restaurant in Spanish Harlem was closed. So we ate Dominican food. It was open. But there was a lot of shops open still, but it wasn't because it was a Monday, and it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't, I guess. And there's also something another friend of mine mentioned, that right now the bill is sort of like something happened where it's not, in Congress at least, or in, you know, it's not like a crucial point right now where like it seems like it might not pass. Like there's no pressure politically that this thing, that anything's going to happen to the law right now. So I think that also when there's going to be more political pressure where something can be done legally, usually these events get stronger. But right now that bill isn't really that powerful, I guess.
Okay.
Well, it is, but I mean, it's more a powerful discourse than it is a powerful law right now, I think.
Right. Let's also talk about where do we go from now? It, all this energy took place on May 1st. I mean, what happens next?
Well, there's going to be another march, I believe, May 19th in Washington, D.C. And I think everybody's talking about that. And, it's up to us at this point to really just try to figure out what we're going to do. There's a huge Minuteman backlash happening right now, where there's another tour of the Minutemen, and they're these are the racist group that is basically trying to oppress the people that are trying to be pro-immigrant, or, you know, they're trying to stop the border and create a wall. So these people are now touring the nation, and they're going to, like, the South, they're going to Georgia, and they're going to Texas, and you can go to their website and check it all out, and it would be, like, to our benefit if people counter-protested, which in California, it's already been that way. The Minutemen will try to make a protest, and there's, like, hundreds and hundreds of, like, Mexican-Americans that'll come out and, like, surround them, and, like,
right.
So,
right.
You know, it's, they've, some of my friends from San Diego Indie Media have been to where they've been in, like, Whittier, you know, like, why would you go to Whittier?
Whittier? Oh, my God.
You know?
Like, I have a long story about Whittier. I won't bother anybody about that. Jeez. Great. Well, I need to ask you about this, because we're both deeply involved in grassroots community radio, and what happened on Monday. I mean, grassroots radio just was the beacon. Just talk about what you think about the role of community radio was, like KBOO and KPFK and KPFT, and
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
Well, I think that these are really important radio stations to continue the, I would say, the analysis and everything, and possibly, I mean, you can't mobilize, but I mean through the radio, literally, or the FCC will come down on you. But I think that it's important to have a space where you can continue to discuss these issues in a way where, you know, people aren't screaming and actually listening to each other. So the role of community media is always important. And but also, I was reading also that there's these the racists, the Minutemen are like blogging about the corporate radio stations owned by Entravision, which owns Univision, and usually in a lot of towns like Chicago, and I don't know if you know, like they usually have like Super Estrella, which is like
yeah.
Very, 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 very powerful FM signal. So low power FM is extremely important, because I think you can discuss things more intellectually, but I think that these other radio stations, and not to mention MySpace,
yeah.
Is being used to mobilize people. But I don't really think that the Super Estrella is mobilizing the people. But definitely, what's happening is that they're just doing their job, because their information is literally catering to a Latino community, that they're basically covering this news, you know, and something that, you know, things that are owned by Clear Channel, who is like this, you know, terrifically vertically integrated media corporation that controls radio stations all the way, you know, to television channels. But mostly all radio stations in the United States are owned by Clear Channel. So I think that just because there's been an alternative, you know, because there's alternative radio, there's low power FM and regular FM with huge, strong signals going everywhere and speaking in Spanish and or English, you know, to Chicanos, you can understand that there's a huge, you know, amount of information that's getting back to the Mexican Americans. So there's basically feedback to them. They turn on, they're historically turning on their channels that they watch with their families, which is Univision, and they listen to Superestrella on their way to work. So, you know, people, when they go protest or they hear about a protest, they can hear the feedback right in the radio. They can hear the crowd chanting in the radio. So, I mean, that's like an extremely, extremely powerful feeling. In fact, when I really hadn't ever been to a protest where it was like they were speaking in Spanish in America. And this was my first protest or demonstration, that everybody was screaming, "Si se puede," and it was like in waves, and there was echoes, and there was drums, and there was chanting. And it was just so powerful to me personally as a Mexican-American. I was just really, I was just taken aback. I just didn't expect that to affect me, just the rhythm of the march and the feet, you know, pitter-patter on the floor. It gave me goosebumps. Just walking there.
I get goosebumps just hearing your story. Well, Zuma, thanks a lot. And once again, I'm always happy that you get to talk to us from New York and stuff. And we'll be doing some more stuff, I hope.
My pleasure.
And we'll get to my leather bag discussion. Okay? We'll get to that.
All righty.
Okay,
talk
ciao.
To you later,
bye. And that was Zuma Aguiar from New York, a radio activist indeed. And now, maybe quickly before, because the show is ending, so there's a free pair tickets for Sunday, May 7th to a celebration of mothers in the Global Village. It's one family pass. It's from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at OMSI at 1945 Southeast Water Avenue. So just call here into the air room if you want this free pass. It's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. This is a one-family pass, free, that we're giving away right now to a celebration of mothers in the Global Village. This is for Sunday, May 7th at OMSI from 1 to 3 p.m. So call in if you want to grab this pair of tickets. Once again, and my name is Eduardo de Landeros Tierra. This was another edition of Buscando America, and I'm riding off the energy of May 1st and what cable did that day. We took over the radio station. How's that?